think I've set it to basically means that I'm notified when I want to be. And other times I'm surprised with it as well. So constant battle, mate. But it does mean that we don't get to chat properly about Brain Food Tribune and, you know, why you should do it. But we'll get on with that a bit later. Because we're live. We're live, everybody. So welcome to Brain Food Live on Air, episode 69. Bringing it to you every Friday, folks. Thank you for joining. We've got an amazing show here today, a very interesting topic, and actually some practical tips on a very interesting topic. We're going to be talking about how to diversify your talent pipeline, not only the whys and wherefores. I think we've discussed the reasons why we should be doing this, but we're going to be talking about the practical steps that you can do to actually get there. And we've got some amazing guests that are going to be joining us today in order to help us. First things first, a sound check. As always, we're multi-streaming here, folks. We are on Crowdcast, so if anybody can hear us on Crowdcast, please say hello. The chat stream looks really dead right now. I'm not sure we're actually live. So please say hello if you're there, folks. If you're on LinkedIn, please say hello there as well. Can you hear us on LinkedIn? Just comment on the LinkedIn live if you can. And I believe I'm live on Facebook. Again, I might have screwed this up, but if you can see me on Facebook in the Recruiting Brain Food group, just comment to say hi or thumbs up or thumbs down. Doesn't matter. Just give me something to let me know that you're here. Okay, I think we're good at least on Crowdcast, which is excellent. Okay, so before we continue, quick word to our sponsors, one of my favorite companies, and in fact, one of the major sponsors of Recruiting Brain Food. They've been with us from day one. They constantly sell out allocation on the newsletter. I think they're going to do the same again next year as well. Completely bulletproof and COVID-proof as well. These are our friends at Workable, one of the best ATSs on the planet. If you are in the game of thinking about a modern ATS, one that can handle your career pages, one that can distribute your jobs, one that can do your candidate relationship management, Workable is a product you should definitely check out. Just shared their link on the chat stream there. You probably know them by now. If you don't, shame on you. Listen, folks, they're a fantastic product with a great customer support team, actually, in multiple places, APAC, EMEA, and of course, USA. Okay, let's get on with the show. We're talking about diversification of the talent pipeline. I'm with Adam Gordon as usual. So Adam, how are you? You're looking kind of hairy. I guess you haven't shaved or been to the barber recently. That's okay. No judgment, just an observation.
No, I haven't. I'm going out wearing a mask, not taking any risks in any way. My wife's going nuts about the beard.
That's nothing to do with COVID, but you can shave. nothing to do with the barber, mate. No. But you know what? Why not? You know what I mean? You may as well lamp it out. I mean, I grew my hair. My hair's now a lot longer than it was before on the top. And I thought, right, at least it's got something rather than just the super short as it was before. So definitely keep that. Anyway, Adam, we always start off by talking about Brain Food last week. Did you read the newsletter? And if you did, what was interesting, man?
Yeah, I did. A whole bunch of different things. I mean, the one that I found most interesting, because I've never, ever seen anybody write it. Or even talk about it, but I've thought about it myself millions of times, is the privilege that we never ever talk about, the privilege of beauty.
Right.
This is 100% factually correct. Good-looking yep. people succeed in greater numbers. They just do. Yep. And you can yep. see it. Why is that? Is it to do with confidence? It could be. Is it to do with background? It could be. Another thing that relates to this, and again, this is I haven't got any facts, but I could probably go and get some because I'm sure it's the case. Successful people attract good-looking partners and make good-looking children. And this is perpetual, ongoing, ongoing, ongoing. So the privilege of beauty just never stops and probably will never stop. Yep. So it's one that's very, very interesting subject.
We should make this into a brain food live topic because it's super interesting. Because I think we all intuitively know it's true, don't we, folks? It's like, you know, someone who is better looking or more attractive is going to convert more. You're going to be more successful in everything you do. It's like a force multiplier. And it does beg the question, though, at what point, I mean, it is unfair. Of course it is. This person has done nothing to deserve that. This is just good genes, or as you say, good upbringing or whatever, healthy food or whatnot. Oftentimes nothing to do with this person's behavior or effort. But at the same time, is it just the fact of life? I mean, is it just the fact that there's going to be unequal distribution of opportunity, and it's we're kind of like barking up the wrong tree to think it could be anything other than that? Like life being fundamentally unfair, we might just have to chew on that rather than battle away with thinking it's necessarily something that needs to be corrected for, because you know what? Life is that way. This is Darwinian type of stuff, isn't it? It's like we're talking about social fitness, sexual fitness, all that type of stuff. It's a brutal world out there. And if you know, I keep animals, I keep frogs, I keep turtles, I keep those types of things. And I see those animals try to breed, and the vast majority don't succeed. And that's unfair. You know, absolutely unfair that tadpole didn't make it. Why did tadpole A not make it? Tadpole B did. I have no clue. Complete random distribution. But tadpole B did. And there he is. He's in the tank. He's seemingly happy enough. But is there a role for us to play to try and correct for that? I don't know. That's a huge question. And I'd love to actually talk about it. Let us know, folks, if this is interesting. It's totally off topic from recruiting brain food a little, although it does align with assessment and it aligns with the concept of D&I. Like, do we at some point just accept that someone is better? Like, what do we do about that? I don't know.
We have to point out for the people that aren't on Crowdcast and they're on Facebook and somewhere else. I mean, Katrina's obviously pointed out we're going to be talking about D&I, so it's it's a good thing to bring up. Joe's made a very interesting comment as well, which is, I'm just going to read what she said. It's about if you are a fancy face but a complete dick, I presume is the word, which means, yeah, good-looking people might well be less agreeable. I don't know. I mean, that's a completely and utterly bigoted thing that I just said, but it could be the case.
It could be. I mean, we don't know. But I think the stats that I read is about height as well. Like tall people also convert more. So there's certain things that seem to be unfair.
That's a fact.
That convert, or as at least there's evidence to it. So anyway, we'll talk about this as we go forward because it's super interesting. There's things we can do about it now. We could anonymize. We could recruit without seeing people and stuff like this. So there's lots of things we can do. Anyway, check it out.
You can get into a lot of trouble. You can get into a lot of trouble in deciding what panel you're going to select to bring on to Brain Food to discuss that, because you got somebody representing different groups or what? I don't know.
Yeah, Adam, we'll get you in here as the underrepresented minority for being one of these like ugly people. You can step in.
I'll get rid of the beard midway through the show, and it's a complete change of success opportunity.
You know what? Anyway. It is weird. I'll just touch on this a little bit, but it is weird because I have been through a period where I had the experience of having a dramatic change in my appearance. And this was actually after a fairly significant car accident, and my face was a little bit messed up. It has to be like scars everywhere. It was welts, a keloid scar, which basically means the scars come out of the skin. So it's actually quite prominent. And it was there on my face for like a year or two, where I was looking in the mirror and actually, whoa, it was a totally different person, looking really aggressive and horrible. And that really damaged my confidence. That really made me feel like everyone who came across me would look at me with either disgust or with a sense of fear or something like that. And it was and probably I fed back into that because I reacted to my own sort of insecurity and then was a more defensive, you know, there's bad energy coming out as a result. So anyway, we need a Brain Food Live in this. We'll talk about this. We'll find out sort of, we'll do a beauty on Brain Food Live. Okay, what else, man?
So you covered from Irina, the open to work is now X-rayable.
Yes.
I don't know why it was never, it's always been X-rayable, so I'm not sure that's new. But the whole thing about open to work is an interesting one because Now, very, very clearly, a lot of recruiters and hiring managers do feel like the best possible people they might hire are not in the market looking for opportunities. So there's a double-edged sword here in a couple of different ways. If you're going out saying that you're open to work, I can definitely see that that's going to attract people to your profile and to come and look at you. But you are, I mean, it's just a fact. You are going, and I don't agree with this, but you are going to potentially put yourself off to some hiring managers in particular. Less so recruiters probably today, but certainly hiring managers.
Right, good point. And I think I'd love to hear people's opinions on this, because is there a prejudice against the unemployed, people who are unemployed? Like, do we as recruiters look at in-work candidates as inherently superior? Do we take it as a signal of quality that they're in work and not let go compared to someone who's out of work? I think before COVID-19, I'd totally agree with you, Adam, but in this pandemic, I just wonder whether people will give people that if you like, preconception might have been loosened a little bit, but it'd be very interesting to explore that. But anyway, check out Irina's post there. Yes, open to work has always been public, but the reason why it's important to put it in there is because this gives a lesson to people about what X-ray really is. Basically means that LinkedIn have created a feature which allows out-of-work candidates to declare on their profile to say, I'm open for work. Well, actually, you can use a Boolean string to actually search for that open for work, which means that the profiles that you bring up should all be the people that have declared on LinkedIn that they're open for work. So you can do that on a search engine on Google, typically. So if you're struggling to engage with candidates because they're in work, then this technique will really work out for you. Anyway, link is shared in the chat stream there. Okay, one more, man.
One more, right. I think John Vlastelica's blog about time to end the ideal candidate profile.
Yes.
So I read that. There's lots of things I thought about it. I didn't agree with everything in it, but the one thing that came through was, it's like if somebody turns up at your car dealership and you say, what's your ideal car? And the person says, well, I want it to have the looks and speed of a Lamborghini, but also the space of a Range Rover. And then you go, come and have a look at this Escort I've got. And they're like, no, I've just told you what I want. You don't get them to tell you what they want.
You work out
what's realistic together. I think that's probably the message that I got from this.
Yeah, I think you summed it up really well. Great blog by John. And it was all about changing the dynamic of the intake meeting. The idea that you go to the manager and the manager knows what he or she is looking for. You got to get rid of that idea. That manager may have no idea what they're looking for. They've just been given a headcount to hire. Or they know they need an extra head in the business in some way, but they actually don't know what the optimal is. And if you don't give that manager support, they're going to invent something, because very rarely are they going to admit to a recruiter, internal recruiter, hey, I have no idea what I'm doing. Like, you've got to really assume that they don't and give them the structure to say, look, let's have a look at what it is that you want. We just don't want an average person. Let's see how we can grow and develop this team. Let's see how this person can get the right person to truly support your team objectives. And I think the ears will open up, and then suddenly you'll have a much more mature conversation. And as it cascades down, you'll have a much better opportunity to deliver on the job, because you can bring in market intelligence into that conversation.
You'll also be a consultant rather than an order taker.
Right, which is the what all of us pretend to be, right? Agency or in-house. So this is, John Vlastelica is a person everyone should be following anyway. He's one of the few people out there that I call a do-rander thinker. He's still a practitioner. He's still coaching. He's still doing sort of operational type stuff, but he also writes and thinks about it. So his information is super relevant and up to date. Okay, that's about it. We're going to talk about diversification of the talent pipeline. And before we say anything more, I'm going to bring on Yelmer Koppelman straight away, because he's only got like 2 minutes with us before he has to go to a meeting. But I want to bring Yelmer on because he was the guy that actually wrote the blog post that inspired this topic. And I want to bring him on to tell us about that, because I think it has huge implications on how we do diversity and inclusion. So let me see if your man Yelmer is here. Maybe he's already gone to his meeting. If so, Yelmer, I'm sorry to have taken this amount of time. No, he's here. I'm going to just bring him on. We'll have to speak in bullet points and get him out of here. Yeah, so Yelmer wrote this really interesting. I mean, he's a recruitment marketer, basically. And he's been monitoring essentially what you're able to do. Oh, here he is. Hey, Yelmer, how are you doing?
Let me see. I think audio is kind of lacking. Let me quickly refresh.
Oh, there he is. He was actually fine, but.
He was. We could hear him anyway.
Hi, Yelmer. How are you? Can you hear us?
Apple never works. I'm telling you now, Apple doesn't work.
It's not Apple, it's the AirPods. It's Bluetooth. Like, one of the things you do you're live streaming is don't do Bluetooth. It just makes a mess. But just to fill in some of the gaps here, and Yelmer will tell us this in a bit more detail, but basically, the ability of ad services. Hi, Yelmer, how are you? I don't think he can hear us. Oh no. We can hear him.
He's writing his new blog.
I know.
Wait, I've just realized. I haven't actually realized. Road Trip Agency is Yelmer and Yelmer. I've only just realized.
Yeah. Yelmer Zoidema.
I didn't realize.
Yelmer Zoidema is here as well. Okay. Well, Yelmer can't join us for the time being. Don't worry about that, man. By the way, Yelmer, if you can hear us, just take off the earpods. I think that's probably a Bluetooth issue more than anything else. We can hear you perfectly fine. So anyway, let me just fill in the gaps on this. Basically, Facebook stopped the ability of people to do advertisers to do retargeting on gender and ethnicity, I believe, and also age. Because one of the powers, obviously, of advertising is that of social media advertising is that you can accurately target based on the personal characteristics of the person, not on behavior, but on the personal characteristics of the person, which means you can do all kinds of really interesting and probably effective things. This is the entire Cambridge Analytica issue. If that wasn't effective, we wouldn't have a problem with it. What did Cambridge Analytica do? They didn't do anything other than sort of take data, understand the demographic that was prepared to vote one way or the other, and target those people. That's all they did. And basically, there's been a backwash on that. Yelmer, can you hear us now?
Yeah, I'm back. So I'm so sorry for this technical interruption.
Don't worry. It
could be like one of those spot the difference things, Yelmer before and after. Yeah?
Yeah, it's a slight technical setup change.
Always on the pod. Listen, Yelmer, I know you're really busy and we've actually eaten a lot of your time. So I don't want to take more of it. So can you briefly explain the blog post that you wrote about Google and what that means for people who are doing advertising?
Yeah, definitely. Love to. No, so what happened, I think it was June 11th by heart, Google wrote a blog post saying that they are changing advertising policies for a number of categories for advertising. So it's employment, and which is the most important for us, of course. And they're limiting the amount of options that there are to kind of target. So in the past, and actually this is still ongoing, so the kind of policies aren't enforced yet. But in the future, it's going to be possible to target on things like age or gender, which is very common in, I would say, recruitment marketing. And then they also won't allow you to target on zip code anymore. So there you are, making it harder to reach a specific audience, which is good, I would say, in one case, because you are not able to kind of exclude audiences. But it's also maybe not so good because you're also not able to include audience that you'd like. Because let's say you want to, for example, hire female software engineers, which is very tricky. Maybe you want to make sure that you only show your ads to those kind of engineers, which you actually cannot do anymore. So they're rolling this out somewhere at the end of the year. They are not really sure when because of COVID. But this is something super interesting because Facebook did this last year and now Google is following them. So definitely interesting to see what happens.
And those two actually own something like 80% of the marketing revenue, or something, like something ridiculous, right?
Yeah, it's crazy. I think of every euro that's being spent on digital marketing online, it's like 80 or 90 cents goes to either one of those two companies. So their market share is huge.
Totally dominant. So this is hugely important. And actually, you've raised a very important point, because oftentimes this type of targeting can be used to diversify your workforce.
Yeah.
I mean, if you wanted to, for instance, to you use the issue of gender, if you wanted to actually improve gender balance in your business, then actually targeting against gender would obviously make sense. But you're saying now that Facebook doesn't allow this now and Google will not allow this, which ultimately means the advert's going to go to men and women and anybody, you know, whatever your gender identity might be, it will go out to all of those people. And therefore, you're going to have, you would not basically have a more accurate way to identify the demographic that you want to recruit.
Yeah, it's going to be really tricky. I think LinkedIn, for example, actually does the same. So it's going to be very tricky to find a different reason. I know, for example, sources, they like to kind of make a list of female first names, for example, for this kind of projects, they would make a list of female first name for like their Boolean search. But it's going to be very tricky for advertising. So I think you're going to have to look at either, for example, different copy in your advertisements that might kind of suit the audience better. But yeah, people are going to be very creative in reaching the right audience.
Yeah, and you know what? There's an ethical challenge here, sort of an ethical mess, I would say, because it seems to be okay to do proactive targeting on gender and ethnicity if you're sourcing, you know, like we talked about this today. We had no problem talking about, hey, if we've got a list of female names or whatever, let's go for that. Seems like it's okay. No problem. I don't have a problem with it. No one has a problem with it. However, it's a problem if you advertise on it. And that seems to me to be an incongruity there. It's like, how do those two things match? It seems that that's an inconsistency. And ultimately, if you want to try and do rebalancing or you want to have a diverse workforce, you want all the tooling available for you, ideally. But it seems here we've had one option, potentially a big option, withdrawn, which is super interesting.
Yeah, I think they're kind of leveling the playing field now for everyone, which is good in some way, but very bad in others. And we've seen that Facebook was first, they got sued by the ACLU and they had to make a settlement and then change their entire platform, which is, it's going to be more expensive to advertise because you are shooting more with the bigger range, like you are throwing it out there. Yeah, so it's accurate. So it's going to be more expensive. So it's going to be less kind of attractive to people to advertise. But it's also going to be very tricky to reach the right audience. So Facebook makes it a little more easy because you can also target on interests, which somehow kind of can relate to your audience. For Google, it's a little different. You can advertise on keywords. But yeah, it's going to be very tricky to reach the right audience. And I think it very much ties into the article of ending the right candidate profile. I think if you know exactly who you're looking for, then that's okay. Then you can reach the right audience. But gender isn't an option to target anymore, or age or whatever.
Okay, so Yelmer, before I let you go, what is the advice for recruitment marketers in this case? Like, so let's say we do want to advertise specifically for an underrepresented demographic in our business. It could be we need more men in here, we need more women in there, or we need more people from different ethnicities. We can't do that anymore. What is the best practice for us to go with?
Yeah, I think the amount of options is getting quite limited. So one of the last options remaining is content. So you can change your content strategy to suit the audience you're trying to reach better. But it's very much kind of subjective. So it's very difficult to kind of make this data driven, which I'm a very big fan of, because content is very much subjective. One of the ways that you could do is lean more towards inbound marketing. So make sure that you lean less on like outbound marketing, which is advertising, and lean more on inbound marketing, which is writing awesome blogs or making great videos, people that actually come to your site instead of them, like you're trying to reach them. I think the latter is a way more sustainable option. And also you can make sure that the stuff you're writing matches your audience a lot better. And then I think that would be a better way than just throwing it out there and advertising very not specifically.
Yeah, so for at least for the D&I side, big changes coming with regards to the efficacy of advertising as a platform, you say. Yeah, amazing. Sure. Yelmer, listen, I'm going to let you go because I know you've got to go.
Thanks so much.
Have a great meeting. Thanks for joining with us. We'll get you back when you've got more time, bro.
Thanks so much, man. Have a great evening.
See you.
Cheers, Yelmer.
Good guy. Oh, by the way, anybody got any questions for any of our guests, ask them in the Ask a Question section. We will get to them in a bit. Adam, we're going to move swiftly on. I know you want to bring other people in, but I want to bring in Katrina straight away. And also Christine, if she's there. Christine Ng is joining us. You remember Christine?
I sure do. She was terrific. Looking forward.
She was great, wasn't she? But yeah, she's actually absolutely. Been doing something really interesting at the FT. I believe it is an audit on BNI. So it'd be cool to see what she has got to offer here. And I will bring in Katrina as well, because obviously Katrina is awesome as well. But I want to talk about the next step. You know, how do we write copy that would be appealing to different demographics and what have you? Yelma touched on the value of creating content and stuff like that. I think, you know, if we can't necessarily advertise effectively in the same way for this diverse workforce, remember, we're trying to, the mission, you know, the starting point we're saying is that we want to try and diversify. We've got to use something else. There she is. Christine, how are you doing?
Good. How are you? Good to see you again.
Good. Yeah, good to see you. I think the last time I saw you, we were actually in the same positions, weren't we? You were in what looks like a kitchen, and I was in my house. There she is, Katrina. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
Great. Good morning to you both. Listen, for the people who don't know you, I just wonder whether you two can just quickly introduce yourselves. So, Christine, do you want to go ahead first?
Yeah, sure. So, hi, I'm the talent acquisition partner at the Financial Times. I've been there for 2 years. So, historically, I always managed product and technology. I think last time I was on Brain Food, I was off on furlough. I'm happy to let you know I'm back at work. I've been back for the last 3 weeks, and I'm actually been drafted in to support the editorial team. So, I'm there until end of August. So, that's where I am at now.
Amazing. Good to see you back in work as well, Christine. And Katrina, do you want to just say a quick word about who you are? What do you do?
Yeah, thank you for having me back. I really appreciate it. So my name is Katrina Kibben. I'm the founder and CEO of a company called Three Ears Media, named after two dogs with four ears. But you have to ask me that story some other time. And we are the job post writing experts. So I've spent the last 3 years really digging in and understanding content for recruiting. And that's what my entire team and our company specializes in.
Cool. Well, Katrina, I just want to start with you right there, because as we spoke with Yelma, there's going to be big changes in terms of how recruitment advertising generally might work, particularly with a loss of the ability effectively to target against personal characteristics. And so he suggested that, look, what's going to have to happen is there's going to be more premium on the content itself. Forget about where you're going to distribute it. You're going to have to get better at pulling people to you. And I just wanted to, putting the D&I lens on it, how do you write copy, or how would you coach your customers to write copy in order to attract a more diverse audience coming into their business?
Yeah, well, when I think about it more as a principle than a tactic, in that I think we have to think of inclusion in the lens always. And that means actually looking at the history of job postings and realizing that in 100 years, we haven't changed our tactics. And I think we've actually brought a lot of our bias with us. So for example, and what I mean by principle, not tactic, right? So people will tell you, don't write years of experience. Okay, that sounds good in practice. Like, it is a great concept, but at the same time, the reason behind it is because that doesn't mean anything. And we're actually excluding diverse populations. Some of the other ways that we've been coaching is talking about, so looking at when we actually see diverse populations go away. And so for 7 bullets, that's where we actually start to see people from different backgrounds opt out of their job postings. And Textio has an entire blog full of data points like that.
Oh, hang on. So this is really interesting. We need to see that blog post. So if there's any chance anybody can pull that out and share, that'd be amazing. So what you're saying is that the number of bullet points on your job post has an impact on the diversity of the applicant.
Exactly. Your tactical approach is what influences, not always what you say. There's both
That's
psychological elements and language elements.
Right. So as a quick practical tip, though, it would say don't write more than 7 bullet points, right?
That's the deal.
Yeah. So quick tactical tip. That's amazing. Okay. What other things would you say are going to be relevant here? We've got people watching here and they're thinking, okay, right, I'm about to publish press post. It's Friday afternoon. I'm going to post some jobs over the weekend. But they're watching this and they're thinking, you know what? Maybe it's a better idea to pay attention to some of the things that are being shared here. What other things do they need to keep in mind before they go and press play?
Absolutely. So the other one that surprises a lot of people is college education. So many people require a college education when it is not necessary. If you are also talking about 10 years of experience, why would a college degree be required? Anyone? Having a college education is privilege.
Go on, Adam. Blank.
Well, it depends on the profession. So there are certain professions where I don't think there's any need for any kind of, we call it university degree.
Yeah.
Such as my degree doesn't qualify me to do anything. You don't need a degree in accountancy to go and become a qualified accountant. But there are certain things like medicine, for example, where you can't get the years of experience unless you've done the qualification. Now, what that does also mean is that is a perpetual cycle of privilege within that profession. Legal one is another one. You can't get a job in that area unless you have a year in law and then the postgraduate in law and then you become a qualified lawyer. So there's a few things where it's absolutely mandatory. Your question about why do you need that, like in almost every profession, totally agree. It shouldn't be required for anything except for maybe medicine, law, and not very much else.
Right. I ran into a role for a temperature screener yesterday that was requiring a minimum college degree, and I had to push back so hard. Be like, they literally point a gun at someone's head and go beep and then put it away. They need a degree for that. Are you kidding me?
So the rationale behind it, though, I remember back in the day as a recruiter, the reason why you put that bar in there is not, you're totally right. I think everyone agrees it's a bit of a BS type of thing to do, because it's a bad signal of suitability, right? I mean, we've also seen companies over the last several years drop the requirement for degrees. Deloitte was one of the early ones to do that, I think. Most of the big accountancy firms have done this as well, which is great. But really, it's there to basically control applicant flow. You slap it up there because you think, I can't handle 500 applicants. And these days with COVID-19, there's a massive accelerator for the volume of applicants, right? I can't handle this. So as a recruiter, practically, I've got to put some irrational things in there just to control the flow. Now, I can understand and sympathize with that person doing that because they've got their job to do, which is to deliver these candidates and not be faced with this avalanche of people coming in. So if they're going to advertise at all, I can understand why they're putting these random things in there. I don't know. Where does that
leave us? All right, I'll push back.
Extend this.
I'm going to push back on that. I'm going to give everyone a sentence right now that eliminates that problem. You ready? I want you to include this sentence in your job. And if you don't know the answer, your job posting isn't ready. Okay? To thrive in this role, you must. To thrive in this role, you must have worked in a customer service environment where people yelled at you. To thrive in this role, you must have managed a team of 5 or larger and done a complete deployment of an ATS system. To thrive in your role, I have never heard someone, to thrive in this role, you must have a college degree. To thrive in this role, you must have... But by simply saying that, so often we can push people away. And that's where a lot of my tactics, it's about getting clarity to push the wrong people away, like you're suggesting, without adding miscellaneous requirements that don't actually add up to success.
Right. I want to say one more thing before I jump to you, Christine, because I think that's a really important thing that you've said there, Christina. Katrina, should I say, in the sense that I can see a lot of people say, all right, if I lose some of these criteria, I'm just increasing the volume of people coming at me. But what you're saying is you can neutralize that by using that sentence. There's the one sentence deployed at the first thing you say, then actually you can resolve the applicant flow problem that you think you have. And you can actually talk about the job rather than list all of these random bullet points. Great stuff. We're going to just keep talking about copy in a bit. But Christine, I just want to jump to you because your recent work in particular with the FT has been super interesting, particularly in a department I understand that is conspicuously non-diverse, isn't it? Sort of.
Well, I think that's the image that we have because of the nature of the topics that we write about around business, finance. It's people assume we're all, you know, white male from banks. It's interesting because I think in product and technology, that area is historically a lot more progressive. So now that I am an editorial, I kind of see what the assumption is because, you know, at the same time, we are a media organization. What we put out there has to be global. So a lot of what I'm doing now is actually an audit of the existing process. But when it comes to product and tech, which is what I've been doing for the last 2 years, yeah, I think when it comes to diversity, we address it in a lot of different ways. You know, you've got age, you've got gender, you've got disability. So, you know, I like to say this, but we have two deaf engineers in the team. And they were there, well, one was there before I joined and one joined after I joined. And there's a lot to be said about the culture that the team has created in order for the deaf engineers to thrive. You know, laying back as to what Katrina mentioned, to thrive in the role. I'm going to steal that, by the way. It's going to be in all of our job descriptions next week. But you learn certain things, like in stand-ups, because they have an interpreter, and you learn certain nuances that not more than one person can speak at the same time, or else it gets really confusing for the engineer. Vice the same thing happens in a meeting. You learn how to collaborate better in a group. We use a Google Doc in order to communicate. So there's so many things that I think as an organization you need to get right before you even go out there and start hiring diverse individuals. And also laying back to LGBTQ plus, you know, our CTO, now CPO, is gay. I think he's like in his 60s, and he always details and outlines his experiences being gay in Middle England 2 decades ago. And as a result, he never got to university. And he wrote a blog about this and said he'd hate to have his whole team go through what he's been through. And as a result of that, we don't hire people with a computer science degree. I mean, ultimately, we're a news media website. We're not a high latency, you know, financial software, health tech company either. So if we're in a position to be able to promote that and hire more diverse people, then we should be.
The audit that you're doing, Christine, I don't share anything that is confidential, but I'm fascinated to know what comes out of an audit. Like, so what do you do? You basically, I'm just imagining like a McKinsey style consultant. You're looking at existing processes, looking at the amount of time spent, all this type of stuff. Is that right? We lost Christina, but she'll be back, I'm sure.
Yeah, literally. So I'm working with the managing editors. So they manage all of the flow that comes into what gets posted on the paper. So I've got given a list of key stakeholders within the team. And I'm just speaking to them. What do you think is working in terms of hiring? What isn't working? What do you think we can do better? So literally, it's like a retro would be the best way of putting it. And I'm just drawing insights and trends. Because once you speak to about 3 or 4 people, you'll see the same insights happening over and over again. And with that, I'm going to present that back to actually a global HR team on Monday, just to make sure it's all aligned with our HR team. And then I'm presenting that findings back to our managing editor next Thursday. So quite nerve-wracking because, you know, my baby and bread and butter has been tech and product, not necessarily editorial. So it'll be interesting to see what they say. Watch this space.
Yeah, and for folks who don't know, I think a managing editor is like the apex person in a news business, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Like, that's King Kong. There's no bigger than that. Exciting. Okay, that's fascinating. Let's talk about sort of practical steps to diversify. We already talked about writing copy is one thing that you can do. What other sort of ideas do we have that can potentially help us diversify the workforce? We've got, let's say, a manager, C-level, committed, he or she wants to do this, but they're starting with a tabula rasa. Let's say they already have gone on your course, Katrina, they know how to do that. What other things do you think we can throw at this? And this is open to you as well, Adam, to drop in.
Well, I think you have to nurture. I mean, you have to proactively identify every, let's say it's gender, let's say you've got the wrong gender balance, you need to go and identify every female who might be able to do those key roles in your organization, and you need to nurture them over time. Your company might have a reputation as being some sort of aggressive male dominated organization, and I mean, you really need to change their opinions over time. You're not going to change their opinion immediately. So nurture is vital.
So just to confirm what you mean by this, you look at the population you currently have and the individuals that are representatives of the underrepresented groups. You need to grow those people specifically, and potentially have them more visible in the recruiting process, in order for you to present this type of view. And I think there's evidence to say actually that if you have a lack of diversity in sort of the validation process, the candidates will drop out because essentially they're not seeing somebody there that they can identify or resonate with. Very similar actually to how kids learn at school, isn't it? Where I think young boys struggle often in education. It seems that they're falling behind the girls in many respects. Theory is maybe because there's a lack of male teachers actually. And they're not seeing the example there. So perhaps you need to have, you know, let's say you've got a female-dominated workforce. There's two guys there. Maybe you want the guys to be a bit more prominent in this case if you're looking to, you know, balance that out. So, yeah, maybe an idea. I'd love to see if anybody's seen if that works. Go ahead, Katrina.
Can I back a little bit on that? I'm going to say this bluntly because I feel that you would encourage that, but I don't like being picked because I'm the token. I don't like being picked because I'm the gay one, because I'm the woman. I'm really encouraging companies. I love the concept of nurturing, right? And being considerate, but at the same time, putting the responsibility on me, you're elevating me because I'm the only, and then you want to put me out there and put my face on things because you want to show that to other people. And that's truly how I feel about it. And actually I did a rules ebook this week and Jackie Clayton talked about that, about how so often when we ask about how to diversify our workforce, we actually put it back on the diverse employees and tell them to go refer a friend and to put their pictures out there. And when in reality, they are looking for opportunities to shine. And so a project that I'm working on right now that has been really interesting, and I'm really thankful for this client for opening their eyes, is actually we're looking at doing ERGs that include the community. So they are ERG open for employee resource groups.
All right, cool. Sorry. Yeah. I was going to say dumb it down for me, Katrina, but you knew that was required. So thank you very much.
And so what I mean by an open door resource group is that they host internal only meetings, but they also host open door meetings that benefit the communities they are trying to attract. They create moments where those people can come into your company and see what it's like. Because the research and what I've seen over and over again is that the only effective way to write or speak about diversity is to recreate experiences where people truly felt included. Let me give you an example. Worked with a very, very large survey company out of San Francisco, which is not, no one here would be like, yeah, they're super diverse, right? A tech company out of San Francisco, very large. I went in and I interviewed their ERG members and I asked them, when did you know you wanted to be here? Those moments became our diversity and inclusion content. We actually recreated them on landing pages. We used their stories. You sent me a really powerful website about stories that influenced this project actually, Hung. And being able to recreate stories instead of recreating corporate garbage about how we care about diversity and inclusion. I will get off my soapbox now, but I think we have to take a different approach and actually become part of our communities instead of talk about attracting the communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, thank you for saying that, Katrina. And actually, I love the idea of creating the idea of creating space for this to happen. So it feels like the metaphor we're moving away from trying to engineer it and more to try and cultivate it, right? It's more organic. It has to happen. Like, you've got to create the welcoming environment for this thing to emerge with the active contribution of the people you're trying to recruit. So you're not sort of having this overly structured way of going forward. I'd love to see a bit more detail as to how that can be implemented actually. So if anybody has any idea on how to do that, then please let us know in the chat. Okay, cool. Let's keep going on. We've actually eaten a huge amount of time, so I want to just get a few more ideas down before I think Andrew Gdomski is here also, so we might be able to bring him on at some point. But what other ideas do we have that potentially we could use, practically use, to help us either think around this or maybe do this a little bit better? It doesn't matter how big or small.
Yeah, I think linking on that. So when I joined the FT, product and technology, there's a very clear goal. Like there was a metric that we wanted to become a 50-50 gender parity organization in our product and technology teams by 2022. Obviously, there's not much hiring going on this year. And I think we're on about 36%. And the feedback we get from people we end up hiring is, are they the box ticking hire? I think exactly something that Katrina mentioned earlier. Sometimes you feel like were you hired just because you were a female engineer. So I think we just had to take a few steps back there and figure out, you know, is that is a ideal goal that we need to get to, but is that actually the right reason? And obviously with everything going on this year, there's been a whole host of other kind of metrics that the team is now trying to think around. So I think once you establish like what is the communities that you want to focus first, and then from there you can really then plan a hiring strategy. Because I found when I first started, I was like spraying and praying. We were like communicating, like we were like hosting all these meetups, we were, you know, working with all these communities, and it wasn't just structured and well thought out, now that I think about it and reflect on it. So, you know, having a very clear goal, firstly from the leadership team, maybe from the results you found from speaking to your ERG teams, is figuring out what that goals are and then working backwards from there. Because I think you notice when companies are being more reactive than strategic, and that's when it becomes a problem.
Talk to me about this quota. So, not quota, it was a soft quota, it was a soft target.
Well, it's a target, but it's a hard target. It's not been publicly announced, so I assume it's a hard target.
Yeah, but you're saying that it was useful in one sense, because it kind of, you know, when you have a number, you can go for it, right? It's like classic management. You got to like put a metric against it, and now I've got a number, I can operate. But at the same time, there's consequences to that, because there's going to be people that feel, hey, I'm here literally because you wanted to achieve this target. You can imagine people carrying a sense of insecurity throughout their careers, entire careers in that business because of that. So how do we fix this?
It's a tricky one. Yeah, I'd love to hear if there's any other thoughts. But I've been following this community called YSYS. In the UK, they're called Your Startup, Your Story. So their focus is on BAME, actually more specific Black candidates within the product and technology space. So we did an event with them. And the feedback that I've also had from them and moving forward, I've seen they've just partnered up with Goldman Sachs and they've just launched a massive campaign using the apprenticeship levy, I think, to hire maybe 10 software engineers for Goldman Sachs this year. So is it that you just be very vocal and say, this is the budget, this is the vacancies we have, and we're helping this one particular community, rather than kind of saying, right, we're offering this, but in the background, we've got all this mechanics that we know this is the type of audience we're trying to hire, but not making it public. I'm not sure. Like, it'd be great to hear what others think, but that's one that I've seen gone out quite recently.
Well, thank you for being straight with us and being comfortable with saying, you know, sure. I think it's important we share that position, because, you know, I think certainty is often a signal of the person covering up something anyway. This is all kind of new. And, you know, we're all fumbling our way forward on this. And we also got to be forgiving of errors, I think. If the will is the right way, you know, we have to kind of not be so harsh on people that do make, let's say, a mistake with the best will. So that's super interesting that you shared that. Any thoughts on this, Katrina? The idea of metrics, you know, the concept of, listen, we need to flat out announce this commitment. I know sort of after sort of the, I mean, obviously in the US is a very topical moment right now after George Floyd and so on. I saw conspicuously people like Adidas, I believe, come out to say, look, we're going to hire 30%. It has to be coming from the African-American community of hires next year. And I thought, okay, that's great. But that's a clear number, right? So suddenly they've got a number. Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing or a necessary thing?
I really like what Christine said about reactive versus strategic. And I feel that that's exactly where there's the divide right now, is that so many are actually doing this in a reactive way. They're publishing they're making a press release. They're revealing these numbers because they're being reactive to deep, deep seated issues that are happening in their company. And frankly, while I love what you said about, you know, we all fumble forward. And I appreciate that we're heading in the right direction. But at the same time, I think it's so much more important to invest the time in looking at the skeletons in your closet before creating anything. You have to clean up your mess, you know? So Adidas is a great example. They published all of this data. That's awesome. 30%. Let's do it. If you read the employee stories that were released shortly after, you'd be disgusted. And you'd wonder why 30% would ever say yes to that job, truly. And I don't know the right answer. I can't say that they're doing everything right or everything wrong. I definitely don't want to blanket that. But I do think that you must. If you take nothing else from this conversation, it's like, you got to look at reality first and listen to those stories. And what you said earlier, Christine, the trends will appear. Address the trends first.
I'm interested in the pros and cons of being public about this, because certainly I am personally somebody who, if I go and tell people I'm going to run a marathon in 5 months' time, I'm going to go and train for it because I'm going to be embarrassed if I don't do it, because I've told everybody I'm going to do it. If I don't tell people and I just sign up and I pay the 50 quid entry fee, chances are I might not do it. So I really respect Adidas saying that that's their target, because people will be monitoring that, and that will make things happen that otherwise might not be happening if they're so public. But if they fail to achieve that, or they have people then going and looking at Glassdoor and going, yeah, actually, why would anybody want to go and work for that company unless they're a white man or whatever it is, then there are some downsides to this as well. So what do you think about that, making targets public? Or even objectives. Targets. Not targets, objectives.
I don't think it creates accountability. My case in point, look at the Fortune 500s. About 5 years ago, there was a huge initiative: make the Fortune 500 more diverse. I want to see that CEO. I want to see the picture of the top 500 CEOs, and I want to see more backgrounds. I want to see what the world looks like. And you know how many people of color or any kind of diverse background sit in the Fortune 100 right now? We actually lost one this week. Nothing has changed. Who holds them accountable? That's the problem. I think it's consumers. We, in theory, consumers would hold them accountable, or their board would hold them accountable, but I've never seen the accountability.
I think I'm going to disagree with Katrina on this. Not that I know any better. So I'm only drawing from my own personal opinion. And Adam, your example actually is similar to mine. It's like, I'm a lazy boy. And I will make a bunch of I learned not to make New Year's resolutions a long time ago, so I'm just not going to do them. But if I make a public statement, then I feel like I feel the pressure to do it. The press ups, right? I mean, that was just in my mind. It's like, right, I'm going to do this every day. And I was doing them every day. It's like, I wasn't enjoying it, but it was like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And actually, similar to the damn newsletter, like, I promised to do that publicly every week, and it's never going to fail. And by saying that, it never has. So I think there is something to say. Maybe it's very different from an individual scenario, because I've got full control over the situation. Whereas if I'm an employer, let's say I'm the CEO that says, hey, we're going to do this, I might not be the CEO in a year's time, or in 5 years' time, almost certainly not the CEO. So a company itself might struggle to maintain that commitment, because it's at the end of the day a collection of human beings in there that are shifting about, moving in and out of jobs and all the rest of it. So, you know, maybe this comes down to the nature of what a company is. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, we like to anthropomorphize some things because it helps us think through what they are. But they're really a collection of human beings. And the bigger the company, the more complex that collection is. Like, we can say, oh, that's a great company, but you know what? There's actually going to be a percentage of idiots in there. Or we can say, that's a horrible company, but you know what? There's some heroes in there as well. It's like difficult to try and uncover. Okay, listen, we're going to move on very quickly because we're going to go 5 minutes. And I know I want to try and get Andrew in because he's got some great things to say. And we're going to have to lose somebody. I wonder who that's going to be. Adam, you're going to get kicked off. Sorry, my friend. Thanks for, by the way, get on with your story. I need to have that back, okay? So we will talk about this. I'm going to see if, I'll see you later, man. Have a good weekend. Oh, I actually didn't need to do that. Crowdcast actually have released a new feature to say you can get six people on screen.
kick him off unnecessarily.
Break him back.
No. I'm pleased he's gone. That's fine. Let's get rid. Always, it's a sense of power to kick people out of the screen. You know it. Give me the small joys in life. But that's totally fine. I think that was an attempt by Andrew to come in. Maybe we can get him. If not, hopefully he's there.
Can you guys hear me?
Oh, he is there. We can't see you though, Andrew. I wonder why that is.
I'll work on it.
Is that something I can do?
I got you.
I focused you on here. That wasn't the right thing. There we go. Cool. Andrew, great to see you, man. Sorry to keep you waiting. Again, briefly, for the people who don't know who you are, do you want to quickly introduce yourself, man?
Sure. I'm Andrew Godomsky, run Aspen Analytics. We are a human resource consultancy focusing on workforce analytics, mostly for government agencies or large-scale global customers.
Yeah. Fantastic. And Andrew, you're always a person I want to bring on to the show because you've got so many great things to say on almost any topic. But in particular, we were talking online today, weren't we, about diversity. And we were sort of kind of a precursor to the show. I was saying, hey, what can we do to diversify the pipeline? And then you just come out with like point, 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 point. I thought, whoa, we need to get Andrew in here to share some of his knowledge. So I just wonder whether you could drop some of those points in because, you know, we might not have the time to contextualize them properly because we're running short on time. But I wonder whether you could just throw them in there for us so that people can take away and think, okay, that's an idea I can work on.
I think the first one is you should expose what your current numbers are. So even if it's just internal. So if you're talking about diversity and inclusion, make that very transparent to your own organization at all levels, supervisory, non-supervisory, all job bands for every division. You have the numbers, you know? So if you're going to start talking about it, offer context, right? The way that people can look at it themselves and say, wow, we are this or not that. And that will get rid of a lot of preconceived misperceptions. Mm-hmm. The second thing is if you're sourcing and you have underrepresentation, every single one of your sourcing Boolean scripts should be focused first on diversity and second on the skill set. Absolutely. There's no reason to even let your recruiters look at some possible candidate that wouldn't likely be leading to a diverse hire if you have underrepresentation and you're doing sourcing because your business already doesn't naturally attract candidates who are diverse. I love it how people say we don't get diverse candidates. Mm. Great, go source. Go source for diverse candidates. Like always. Like if you're looking for a program manager or a project manager and you have not put in Boolean logic that would lead you to believe that that person is more likely to graduate from schools or whatever with diversity, you have done this wrong. Because what you've done is now you've deliberately sourced people from the overrepresented part of your population that you are trying to correct. And Adam, I appreciate the word diversity, so thank you. But you know, why would you deliberately source for overrepresented parts of your community? Those are two. The other would be your interview panels have got to be diverse. Right. And that will mean you will probably make proxying decisions on hiring. And that is a big change.
Yeah.
Right? That's like, oh, someone doesn't get to interview somebody else. So, and when I say panels, Adam, I mean the multiple people who interview, right? So if four people are going to interview a candidate, either all at once or individually, you still need to make sure that we've got, and forgive the demographic responses. It's two men, two women who have self-identified, half are X. And then you have to think about military status, disability, different educational backgrounds, national origin. You know, the word, you know, diversity in Asia, and let's just say the eastern part of Asia, actually in data looks very different than it does in the western part of Asia. The reliance on national origin to define underrepresentation changes country to country. In the United States, it doesn't, that's not necessarily the case, but Europe, Asia, Africa, South Africa, Mexico, et cetera. I mean, they all rely on national origin a lot more for the definition of underrepresentation. By the way, Christine, I think it's just you and me talking.
Yeah, I think so. I was going to say I'm the host and I'm apparently wrap it up, but I completely agree with you because I was speaking to the team from Hong Kong last week and I was like, I'm from Hong Kong. And, you know, technically, if I was in Hong Kong office, I'm not diverse because I am the local population there, right? Whereas our English expats are technically the diversity hires out there. So, yeah, you got to see it from a local region. Any final points? Anything to take away for our lovely audience today?
You know, I know Hung wanted me to talk a little bit about metrics. Don't be afraid of your numbers, right? The numbers are important to have visibility on. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have good numbers now, mm-hmm. start taking the processes so you can't. I'm not talking about the results. If you can't actually count with your data, start making the steps so you can.
Yeah, agreed to that. And also, if you don't reach those targets, well, I'm hoping we will, I'm being optimistic, but if we don't, what can we learn from that and take that forward?
Right. And it is difficult. I made a comment the other day somewhere how difficult the math is. Mm. You know, if you were to think about I'll use male and female as the example. If I have 40% female and 60% male, and I need to go ahead and I want to make parity, but I only have 8% attrition a year, and I got 10,000 people, it will take me a very long time to achieve parity unless I fire men and only hire women. And that's its own set of complicated issues.
Yeah.
Right. So be patient with change. Mm-hmm. Be diligent, have a program, talk about it, make it part of your culture, because you won't meet your results as fast as you think. It's mathematically difficult in some cases.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that, because last year, I think our number was 36, and beginning of the year, we made really great hires, and I was super excited. I was like, yeah, we must be at 40% by now. And obviously, I didn't factor in attrition. So we were on 36. So operationally, there's a lot of aspects we do need to think about. If no one's leaving at the same time, then yeah, that'll impact your goal.
That's right. You could easily hire someone and then in a represented group, and then another person retires. Mm. In that representative group, and then you are even on your progress for that time interval.
Yeah.
And so one of the things, and Hung, I'll leave you with this, is you should have a pretty good understanding of how long people tend to stay with the organization and when people may be retiring or they're within retirement age. Understand what's the attrition of the representation and make that the dialogue. We may lose this. What are we doing to address that possibility? And if you're not having the dialogue, then what you're doing is you're reacting to when it happens.
on just to address that point, but sorry, I had to leave you guys sort of temporarily. Everything was happening. There was an Amazon delivery, and I think for some reason they must have stood on the internet outside and it cut the internet off as well. Craziness. Anyway, the point that you made on the post on LinkedIn, but also just now, Andrew, I just wanted to jump on this. It's actually your workforce analytics are critically important because you can then figure out what you've got currently, and then you can plan for the future diversity problem you have. And if you had the pre-planning, actually, that goes a long way. It's when you have the vacancy and you suddenly say, oh, what are we looking at right now? That's when it's panic stations and you load on all the pressure to recruitment. And recruiting ends up having to do a lot of the things we're saying that, you know, we shouldn't be doing. The reactive stuff that you mentioned earlier there, Christine. Mm.
Well, and to that end, if you knew that the majority of, say you've got a tech company, you know that people tend to stay anywhere between 26 to 35 months as 80% of the population until they attrit, right? That kind of means every time that you make a stride, you know, towards getting a targeted representation, that means in 2 years, you're going to have to start again.
Yep.
Right? Yep. Because you know you're likely losing that employee. And so it's this constant revolving that you have to do to make it part of your strategy. And then what ends up happening is if you start seeing much larger numbers, then you start making the questions of, do I use employment branding differently rather than sourcing? Do I use advertising differently? Do I make relationships with organizations or should I create ERGs that help this process, not for the next 5 months, but for literally the next 5 years?
On that final note, Andrea, I just want to say this also begs sort of points to the longevity of the people who are driving the car here. So if you're in the HR or TA team or whatever it is, you're involved in trying to drive diversity and inclusion. It can't just be down to you as a human being, because what's your longevity or tenure in the business? Like if you're, I don't know what the number is, but it's not that long really. Like we're in and out. Christine, you've been there for 2 years. I think that's probably about average for a TA person, isn't it, these days? I don't know. It's not long. So we've got to find a way to really, you know, in the time we have, 2.6 years according to Adam, wow. In the time we have, we have to embed it into the department that's currently most sensitive to this, so that as we do leave and when we do leave, we're not having another person to come in to start the show again. There's someone else to immediately pick that up. There's a machine going, or at least, you know, there's to try and use an organic metaphor, but there's at least a garden that's going to produce some harvest there. It's not just an abandoned field.
The concept of mistake of designing programs like this that avoid backsliding and installing and have mistake-proofing methodology is really important, because what we do know is that the variable is that the team who's advocating for this does change, to your point, Hung.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, well, listen, thanks, everybody. Thanks, Christine. Thanks, Andrew. Thank you, Katrina. I think she wasn't kicked off, was she? I hope she kind of let
off. Yeah, she had to go.
Good stuff. And thank you, obviously, Yelma, as well, for coming on. Thanks, Adam, for being a sport, for hanging around also. And my apologies, everyone, for disappearing on you for a couple of minutes. I'm sure you could handle that and it wasn't so bad. Okay, we're done for the day. Thank you, everyone, for joining. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please let me know if this type of content is important to you. And if it isn't, also let us know, because I'd be interested in your feedback. What do you want to hear in terms of topic contents on Brainfuel Live? What type of guests would you like to see us try and bring onto the show? Tell us that in comments and we'll see what we can do about it. We will be back next week. I think we're talking recruitment automation and the recruitment automation hacks that you need to know. So we've got some amazing people coming onto the show for that. Please make sure you tune in, follow the channel if you like what we're doing. Final shout out to our sponsors, Workable. They're an ace ATS. You should know them by now. So if you're looking to switch an ATS or looking to upgrade one, Workable might be something you'd like to check out. Okay, that's about it for me and for the rest of the crew. Have a very good weekend, everybody.
Happy weekend, all.
Bye.
So if I lose the internet, I think I lose the live stream on Facebook, surely. No, amazing. Okay, let's end the broadcast.